Chapter 2, Roots of American Democracy. Why it matters. The American colonies were settled by individuals from many nations. Nonetheless, the majority of American settlers came from England. Many of the rights that American citizens enjoy can be traced to the political and legal traditions of England. When English people began settling in the Americas, they brought with them a tradition of limited and representative government. Big Ideas. Section 1. Our English Heritage. Political and economic institutions evolve to help individuals and groups accomplish their goals. The English colonists brought with them ideas about government that had been developing in England for centuries. Section 2. The English colonies. Political, social, religious, and economic changes influence the way Americans think and act. The English established 13 colonies along the east coast of North America. Section 3. Colonial society. Political, social, religious, and economic changes influence the way Americans think and act. The English colonists create a prosperous economy and learn to govern themselves. Section 4. Birth of a democratic nation. Political principles and major events shape how people form governments. The Declaration of Independence explained why the colonies were founding a new nation. Section 1. Our English Heritage. Real-world civics. For many of us, town meetings seem like something from another century. And for the most part, they are. The first settlers in this country, most of whom were English, brought with them their traditional forms of government, which relied on local involvement. Town meetings are a form of direct democracy, giving citizens a clear voice in decision-making. The purpose of the town meeting has not changed in over 200 years. What influenced colonial government? Main idea. Science and the influence of reason led to new innovations in political thought. Civics and you. What helps people get along with each other? Do they need rules, a strong leader, or to share the same goals? Read to learn how thinkers in Europe answered these questions. Many of the rights that American citizens enjoy today can be traced to the political and legal traditions of England and to the ideas of a cultural movement called the Enlightenment. When English people began settling here in the 1600s, they brought with them a history of limited and representative government. They also brought with them new ideas about law, society, and the rights people possessed. For centuries, England had been ruled by a monarch, a king or queen. However, noble families also had considerable power. The monarch gave them ownership and control of vast lands in exchange for their loyalty, tax payments, and promises of military support. The Magna Carta. In 1215, nobles rebelled against King John, who had treated them harshly. They forced the king to sign an agreement called the Magna Carta, Latin for Great Charter. This document, or deed, protected the nobles' privileges and authority, or control. It also granted, or allowed, certain rights to all landholders, rights that eventually came to apply to all English people. These rights included equal treatment under the law and trial by one's peers. The Magna Carta limited the power of the monarch by guaranteeing that no one would be above the law, not even the king or queen. See the appendix to read this document. Parliament. Kings who followed John met regularly with nobles and church officials to get their advice. Gradually, this group grew in size and power, expanding to include representatives of the common people. By the late 1300s, it had developed into a legislature, a lawmaking body, known as Parliament. For the next few centuries, English monarchs cooperated with Parliament. In the mid-1600s, however, serious power struggles began. In 1688, Parliament removed King James II from the throne and invited his daughter, Mary, and her husband, William, to rule instead. In doing so, Parliament demonstrated that it was now stronger than the monarch. This peaceful transfer of power, known as the Glorious Revolution, changed government in England. From that time on, no ruler would have more power than Parliament. English Bill of Rights. To clarify this relationship, Parliament drew up the English Bill of Rights in 1689. This document further restricted the monarch's power. It also guaranteed free elections to Parliament, the right to a fair trial, and the elimination of cruel and unusual punishments. Common law. In its earliest days, England had no written laws. People developed rules to live by, however, and these customs came to have the force of law. In addition, as a court system developed, the court's decisions became the basis of a body of law. When judges were asked to decide a case, they would look for a precedent or a ruling in an earlier case that was similar. The judge would then make a consistent ruling. This system of law is known as common law. It rests on court decisions rather than regulations written by lawmakers. Although England's system of common law came about without being planned, it worked well and has remained in place to this day. Our own laws about property, contracts, and personal injury are based on English common law. Philosophical influences. John Locke, 1632 to 1704, was an English writer who supported the Glorious Revolution. Locke argued that people were born free, equal, and independent. They also possessed rights, called natural rights, to life, liberty, and property that no government could take away. In the Second Treatise of Government, Locke wrote, "All mankind being all equal and independent, no one ought to harm another in his life, health, liberty, or possessions." John Locke, The Second Treatise of Government. What is a social contract? Locke also believed that if a government tried to take away people's natural rights, it was breaking the social contract. A social contract is an agreement among the people in a society. They agree to give up part of their freedom to a government in exchange for protection of natural rights. The people agree to obey the government as long as it protects their rights. French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau, 1712 to 1778, wrote in The Social Contract, published in 1762, that man is born free, yet everywhere he is found in chains. Rousseau was referring to the large number of people in Europe living under oppressive governments. He argued that the people alone had the right to determine how they should be governed. Separation of powers. A French writer, Baron de Montesquieu, 1689 to 1755, developed the idea about dividing the branches of government into different parts to balance each other so that no one part can become too strong or threaten individual rights. His ideas on the separation of powers, along with Locke's ideas on the social contract and natural rights, became cornerstones of the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. Ideas of Enlightenment. Locke and Montesquieu are considered Enlightenment thinkers. Building on the scientific discoveries of the 1600s, these thinkers believed that God had created an orderly universe. The laws of this universe could be discovered through the use of human reason. Enlightenment thinkers argued that the laws that governed nature also applied to human life and society. As you will read, the ideas of the Enlightenment had a profound effect on Americans. Reading check. Evaluating. Why was the English Bill of Rights important to English citizens? Colonial Traditions of Self-Government. Main idea. The American colonists accepted the idea of representative government. Civics and you. What do you do when you face a difficult problem? Do you try to solve it yourself? Do you ask other people for help? Read to learn about the development of representative government in the colonies. In the 1600s and 1700s, England established colonies in America. A colony is a group of people in one place who are ruled by a parent country elsewhere. The early colonists remained loyal subjects of England with a strong sense of English political traditions. They accepted common law and believed that the ruler was not above the law. They also expected to have a voice in government and other basic rights. Representative government. The first permanent English settlement in North America was Jamestown, in what is now Virginia. It was founded in 1607 by the Virginia Company, a group of London merchants. Jamestown was organized as a joint stock company, which provided investors partial ownership and a share in future profits. The merchants also received a charter from King James I. A charter is a written document granting land and the authority to set up colonial governments. At first, Jamestown was managed by a governor and a council appointed by the Virginia Company. In 1619, however, the colonists formed the House of Burgesses, the first representative assembly, or legislature, in the English colonies. The House of Burgesses had little power, but it marked the beginning of self-government in colonial America. The Mayflower Compact. In 1620, shortly after the House of Burgesses was formed, another group of colonists from England, known as the Pilgrims, arrived in America. They built a settlement called Plymouth, hundreds of miles north of Virginia. Today, Plymouth is in Massachusetts, a part of New England. Even before their ship, the Mayflower, reached America, the Plymouth colonists realized they needed rules to govern themselves if they were to survive in a new land. They drew up a written plan for government. 41 of the men aboard signed the Mayflower Compact. See the appendix to read this document. A compact is an agreement or contract among a group of people. Town meetings. The Mayflower Compact established a tradition of direct democracy. Throughout the colonial period, and in New England today, citizens held town meetings to address local problems and issues. These town meetings developed into the local town government. Although anyone in the town could attend and express an opinion, voting was limited to men who had been granted land by the town. Fundamental Orders of Connecticut. By 1639, a number of pilgrims were being persecuted for their religious beliefs. They left Massachusetts and colonized the area that is now Connecticut. There, they developed America's first written constitution, the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut. This document called for an assembly of elected representatives from each town to make laws. It also called for the popular election of a governor and judges. Early legislatures. The success of the Jamestown and Plymouth colonies led to other settlements in America. By 1733, 13 English colonies stretched from Massachusetts, which included what is now Maine, in the north, to Georgia in the south. Each new colony set up its own government. Each colony had a governor who was elected by the colonists or appointed by the English king. Each colony also had a legislature, with representatives elected by the free adult males. As years passed, the colonial governments took on more responsibility while the king and parliament dealt with matters in Great Britain. The country was renamed the United Kingdom of Great Britain in 1707 when England unified with Scotland. The colonists in America soon grew used to making their own decisions. Reading check. Concluding. How did Great Britain's tending to matters in that country affect the colonists? Section 2. The English Colonies. Real World Civics. During the American Revolution, the drum and fife called the soldiers to action. Julie Phelps keeps the tradition alive. She practices the fife, whose shrill notes strengthen soldiers' orders to march, turn, change formation, or halt. The fife and its companion, the drum, have marched to war with soldiers since the 12th century. During the Revolutionary War, the fife and drum were well known to colonist soldiers. The rat-a-tat-tat-a-pan of the drums provided a beat for marching and for signaling battle. So, even though colonists worked to escape from English rule, they brought an English military custom into battle. Settling the colonies. Main idea. The English established 13 colonies along the east coast of North America. Civics and you. How far would you travel to live in a new place? What would it be like if you did not know what to expect? Read to learn about the early settlements in North America. Although several European nations had claims in North America, it was the English who eventually dominated the continent. By 1733, there were 13 colonies along the eastern seaboard under English control. These colonies had been founded in a variety of ways and for a variety of reasons. Despite these differences, the colonies had one thing in common, their English heritage. New England Colonies. 9 years after the Pilgrims arrived at Plymouth, another group of investors received a royal charter to start a colony north of Plymouth. In 1630, about 900 men, women, and children landed at Massachusetts Bay and built a town they called Boston. During the 1630s, more than 15,000 people journeyed to the new colony of Massachusetts. By the mid-1600s, the New England colonies of Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New Hampshire had been founded. The Middle Colonies. A second group of colonies grew up south of New England. Known as the Middle Colonies, they included New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. The first of these, New York, was originally the Dutch colony of New Netherland. An English fleet seized the important harbor town of New Amsterdam on Manhattan Island in 1664. The English King Charles II gave the colony to his brother, the Duke of York. The newly acquired or obtained colony of New York became a proprietary colony, in which the owner or proprietor owned the land and controlled the government. The Duke of York gave the southern part of his colony to two men, who named it New Jersey. For several decades, or 10-year spans, New Jersey was a proprietary colony. In 1702, it became a royal colony, one owned and ruled directly by the king. Another proprietary colony was started in 1680. William Penn received a large parcel of land west of the Delaware River from King Charles. Penn saw his colony, Pennsylvania, as a place to put his Quaker ideals of peace, equality, and justice to work. By offering freedom of religion, Penn drew many settlers to his new city of Philadelphia. In 1704, the southernmost three counties of the colony separated and became known as Delaware. Southern Colonies. A third set of colonies formed in the South after Jamestown, Virginia, was founded as a joint stock colony in 1607. It became a royal colony in 1624. North of Virginia, Maryland was founded in 1734. To Virginia's south, another group of proprietors started Carolina. The two parts of Carolina developed differently, and they officially became two royal colonies, North and South Carolina, in 1729. Georgia. The last English colony founded in America was Georgia. A group led by James Oglethorpe received a charter to create a colony where English debtors and poor people could make a fresh start. In Great Britain, debtors were often thrown into prison. the British government had another reason for creating Georgia. This colony could protect the other British colonies from Spanish attack. Great Britain had been at war in the early 1700s, and new conflicts over territory in North America were always breaking out. Located between Spanish Florida and South Carolina, Georgia could serve as a military barrier. Reading check, comparing. How did proprietary and royal colonies differ? People of the colonies. Main idea. Throughout the colonies, people adapted their traditions to the new conditions of life in America. Civics and you. Would you be willing to move across the ocean to unexplored, possibly dangerous territory to gain certain freedoms or perhaps just to get a new start on life? Read to find out why English settlers came to North America. English colonists settled in America for different reasons. Some immigrated to escape religious persecution in England. Others came in search of economic gain. Still others, such as criminals, prisoners, and enslaved Africans, did not come willingly. Colonists' reasons for immigration helped shape the types of colonies they created. Why did colonists immigrate? Many colonists in New England and the Middle Colonies were religious dissenters, those who followed a faith other than the official religion of England, the Anglican religion. For example, the founders of Massachusetts were called Puritans because they wanted to reform or purify the Anglican Church. Religious havens. These Puritans also considered themselves pilgrims, or people on a religious journey. The rulers of Massachusetts did not believe in toleration or acceptance of other religions. In the late 1600s, devout Puritans in Salem and other Massachusetts towns held trials of people accused of witchcraft. In the town of Salem alone, 19 residents were convicted and hanged, and 5 died in prison before the trials were discontinued in 1693. Other groups sought religious freedom. The Quakers founded Pennsylvania as a safe place to practice their religion. A proprietor named George Calvert founded Maryland in 1634 as a safe home for Catholics. In 1636, a minister named Thomas Hooker led his church congregation to Connecticut, south of Massachusetts, in search of religious freedom. Another minister, Roger Williams, was forced to leave Massachusetts for his religious views and his belief that it was wrong to take land from Native Americans. In 1644, Williams received a charter to found the colony of Rhode Island. Rhode Island became the first place in America to welcome people of all faiths. Economic opportunity. Especially in the South, many settlers came to the colonies for economic reasons. Early Virginians struggled until they began successfully to raise and sell their tobacco crop. Carolina was strongly influenced by immigrants from the English colony of Barbados in the West Indies. There, many settlers became involved in growing rice and indigo, a valuable blue dye. The system of indentured servants made it possible for poor people to come to the colonies. Colonists in America agreed to pay the cost of transporting the servants to the colonies and promised to provide food, clothing, and shelter to them until their indentures or labor contracts expired. Conflict over land. Throughout the colonies, the spread of settlements led to conflicts with Native Americans over land. In some colonies, such as Pennsylvania, relations were fairly peaceful. In Virginia, they were not. In the 1640s, Virginia Governor William Berkeley agreed to keep settlers from taking Native American land. A planter named Nathaniel Bacon disagreed strongly with this policy and led attacks on the colonial government. Bacon's rebellion showed that many settlers were not willing to be restricted by government policy. The beginnings of slavery. In the southern colonies, a form of large-scale agriculture developed, based on the plantation or large estate. This system for growing tobacco, rice, and indigo demanded more workers than immigration and the system of indentured servants could provide. Southern farmers began using enslaved Africans. Enslaved workers, unlike indentured servants, did not have to be freed and therefore would never need their own land. At first, it was not clear that enslaved Africans were to be treated differently from white indentured servants. Gradually, legal distinctions were adopted. Indentured servants retained the rights of English people and the protection of the law. Africans were protected by no law or tradition. The trade in enslaved Africans was at the heart of what came to be called the triangular trade, a pattern of trade that developed among the Americas, Africa, and Europe. The colonists shipped rum to Africa, where traders exchanged it for enslaved people and gold. The enslaved were shipped to the West Indies and traded for sugar and molasses, which was used to make rum in America. The Africans' horrendous journey across the Atlantic was known as the Middle Passage. A young African, Alauda Equiano, described the voyage. "I was soon put down under the decks. The closeness of the place and the heat of the climate added to the number in the ship, which was so crowded that each had scarcely room to turn himself, almost suffocated us. The shrieks of the women and the groans of the dying made the whole a scene of horror." Alauda Equiano, the interesting narrative of the life of Alauda Equiano. Reading check, evaluating. How did the system of indentured servants help both business owners and workers? Section 3. Colonial Society. Real World Civics. 6 U.S. presidents graduated from Harvard University, a remarkable record for a school founded before the Revolutionary War and designed to train ministers. Most early schools in America were established on the ideals of freedom of religion and freedom of education. In 1940, John F. Kennedy, one of those Harvard graduates, prepared to leave college to visit Britain, where his father was the U.S. ambassador. Kennedy later returned to the United States during the early rumblings of World War II and went on to be, in just over two decades, the 35th president of the United States. The economy. Main idea. The people in the colonies developed different ways of living. Civics and you. Is your community or region known for any special product, either agricultural or manufactured? Read to find out how the economies of the New England, Middle, and Southern colonies differed. From the beginning, geography played a key role in how colonies developed. Colonists in the different regions had to adapt or adjust to the climate, soil, terrain, availability of rivers and harbors, natural resources, and other factors. New England. Most people in New England, including farmers, lived in towns. Farms were small and located on the town's outskirts. Long winters and rocky, infertile soil made large-scale farming difficult. Other New Englanders worked in small businesses, milling grain, sewing clothes, or making furniture. Some worked as blacksmiths, shoemakers, or shopkeepers. Shipbuilding was an important industry. The region's forests provided wood for boats, and fishing and whaling also employed many New Englanders. The Puritan religion of early New England emphasized hard work, modest living, and personal virtues such as honesty, thriftiness, and obedience. These personal characteristics became known as the Puritan ethic. The Middle Colonies. In contrast to New England, the soil and climate in New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware were more suited to agriculture. Farmers in the Middle Colonies grew large amounts of wheat and other cash crops, which they sold in markets and overseas. This foreign trade spurred the growth of busy ports such as New York and Philadelphia. Industries such as sawmills, mines, and ironworks were developed to take advantage of the region's abundant natural resources. Industry and agriculture also improved through the ideas and energy of immigrants from Germany, Holland, Sweden, and other European countries. The Southern Colonies. A warm climate, long growing season, and rich soil spurred the growth of large-scale agriculture in the Southern Colonies. In Maryland, Virginia, and North Carolina, tobacco was the leading crop. Rice dominated in South Carolina and Georgia. Both crops were grown in the Tidewater, areas of flat, low plains near the seacoast of Virginia and North Carolina. The region's rivers made it easy to transport the harvested tobacco and rice, along with other products such as indigo and grain, to the coast for shipment to overseas markets. Charleston, South Carolina, became a leader in trade thanks to its excellent harbor. Tidewater crops required very large amounts of labor. Owners of plantations, the large estates of the Southern colonies, came to depend on enslaved African workers. Smaller-scale agriculture also existed, mainly in inland areas. Independent small farmers grew tobacco, corn, and other crops and were less dependent on enslaved workers. Small farmers outnumbered the large plantation owners. The plantation owners, however, had greater wealth and more influence. They controlled the economic and political life of the region. Because large-scale agriculture was dominant in the South, the region did not develop much industry or commerce. It traded its many agricultural products for the manufactured goods it needed. Reading check, explaining. Why did the plantation system develop in the South, but not in the New England or the Middle Colonies? An American identity. Main idea. The colonies continued to grow and develop their own culture and beliefs. Civics and you. What are some of the things you consider truly American? Read to find out how the colonists began to form a culture that was different from other cultures. In 1760, an English traveler in America, Andrew Burnaby, wrote that the colonies were as different from one another as fire and water. He felt their differences in character, manners, religion, and interests would prevent them from ever uniting, Burnaby noted. In short, such is the difference of character, manners, religion, and interest of the different colonies that if they were left to themselves, there would soon be a civil war from one end of the continent to another. Andrew Burnaby, Burnaby's Travels Through North America. But in spite of the opinion of Burnaby and others, by the mid-1700s, colonists were already developing an American identity. Religion. The desire for religious freedom was the reason many settlers first came to America, and religion remained a key element of the emerging American identity. In several colonies, such as Massachusetts, religious leaders were often also the leaders of the government. Puritans passed laws that supported their beliefs about religion and society, and they had the power to expel those who did not share these beliefs. In other colonies, however, religion became separate from government, and toleration became the official policy. In colonies such as Pennsylvania and Rhode Island, toleration of other religions drew settlers of many different faiths. Religious tolerance gradually spread to other colonies during the 1700s. The Great Awakening. While some Americans turned away from religion in the 1700s, others renewed their faith. In the 1720s, a powerful religious revival known as the Great Awakening swept through the colonies. Fiery preachers stressed the importance of a personal religious experience and questioned the commitment and authority of some established religious leaders. congregations were torn apart, and new religious groups, such as Baptists and Methodists, grew strong. In the South, enslaved workers found hope in Christianity, which strongly influenced the development of a new African-American culture. Education. Religious feeling also led to the founding of America's first colleges and schools. Colleges such as Harvard in Massachusetts, Princeton in New Jersey, and William and Mary in Virginia were created for the purpose of training ministers. Colleges such as Harvard in Massachusetts, Princeton in New Jersey, and William and Mary in Virginia were created for the purpose of training ministers. Religious groups also set up schools for children to make sure that people could read the Bible for themselves. In such colonies, taxes were levied to pay for public education. Not all colonial Americans enjoyed the benefits of education, however. Slave codes, strict laws of governing the treatment of enslaved people, made it illegal to teach enslaved workers to read or write. Family life. The family formed the foundation of colonial society. Men were the formal heads of their families, which were often large. Wives looked after children and worked on household chores. On farms, men and women often worked together, assisted or helped by older children. In towns, women sometimes held jobs outside the home. They worked as maids, cooks, nurses, teachers, shopkeepers, or seamstresses. Families often arranged for their sons to work as apprentices or learning assistants to craft workers who taught them a trade. Married women had few rights, while widows and unmarried women could run businesses and own property. Women, however, could not vote, and men managed all community and church affairs. Ideas about government. In spite of the inequalities that existed in colonial America between whites and African Americans and between men and women, a new spirit was growing. The Enlightenment reinforced the idea of natural rights and individualism. The Great Awakening encouraged Christians to question traditional authority and to rely on their own insights about God. Together, these two powerful influences helped create a spirit of egalitarianism, or equality. One element of this spirit of egalitarianism was the belief of many colonists that they possessed all the traditional rights of native English people. Americans viewed the growth of the power of Parliament in the 1700s with approval. They considered the British legislature the protector of the people's rights against royal power. At the same time, America's colonies were governed by officials appointed by the British Crown, a decision in which Americans had no say. British trade and tax policies protected British interests at the expense of American businesses. Government in the colonies. The English government had permitted new patterns of land ownership, new types of worship, and new kinds of government in its colonies. Once established, these practices became fixed principles. The colonists became used to self-government and gradually came to think of it as their right. By 1733, all 13 English colonies had been established, each with its own constitution. The Massachusetts Body of Liberties, adopted in 1641, protected individual rights and became part of colonial law. In 1683, the Pennsylvania Frame of Government was passed. This document, along with a 1701 Pennsylvania Charter of Privileges, established part of the basis for the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. By the time the colonies gained independence in 1776, each colony had its own representative government, one that had been operating for more than 100 years. Growing discontent. Yet, by the mid-1700s, many Americans felt they did not possess the rights of English citizens. They read Enlightenment writings in which the rights of the individual were proclaimed. Yet many British policies toward the colonies did not follow these ideals. In particular, colonists accepted John Locke's idea that government derives its power from the consent of the people. As the century wore on, Americans looked for answers to the problem of a distant and unresponsive British government. To a growing number, one answer seemed to make the most sense. Independence. Reading check. Concluding. How did religious beliefs influence American ideas about government? Section 4. Birth of a Democratic Nation. Real World Civics. The air was hot and muggy, the sun beating down at midday, and the windows were tightly shut. As July 1776 began, dozens of men sat around these tables in Independence Hall in Philadelphia debating Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence. They were British subjects living in a British colony, so each man agreeing to this document was committing treason against his country. Treason was punishable by death. Yet 56 men signed the Declaration, which outlines the reason why America should declare itself a new and independent nation. On the 4th of July, these men announced to the world, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor, in the hope that they one day would be free." Colonial resistance. Main idea. The American colonists began to fight against British control. Civics and you. Have you ever stopped buying a product, perhaps because the manufacturer changed the product or raised its price? Read to find out why American colonists refused to buy British products. Separated from Great Britain by more than 3,000 miles, 4,828 kilometers, a vast ocean, and left largely to their own devices, the American colonists gained valuable experience in self-government. They learned how to manage their own affairs. This policy of loose control by the British was known as salutary or healthy neglect. Under this policy, the British did not insist on strict enforcement of laws. Mercantilism. Around 1760, when George III took the throne, Britain's policy toward the American colonies began to change. The British adopted a program called mercantilism. Mercantilism is the theory that a country's power depends on its wealth. A nation should sell more goods to other countries than it buys. A favorable balance of trade, more exports and fewer imports, brings money into the country. For mercantilism to be successful, Great Britain needed the colonies to be a source of cheap raw materials. The Navigation Acts were a series of laws passed in the early 1660s that put the theory of mercantilism into practice. Growing tensions. Since the late 1600s, the British and the French had battled for supremacy in Europe and other parts of the world. After several wars in Europe, the fighting spilled over into North America. At a conference in Albany, New York, in 1754, the colonies debated a plan for a federal union. The plan, proposed by a committee led by Benjamin Franklin, was rejected. However, the Albany Plan showed that many colonists were already thinking about joining together for their common defense. From 1754 to 1763, Great Britain fought a long, costly war against France, the French and Indian War, winning French territory in North America. In order to prevent conflict with Native Americans over land, colonial settlers were forbidden to settle west of the Appalachian Mountains without permission from the British government. This proclamation of 1763 enraged many farmers and others who wanted the land. To pay off its heavy war debts, Britain placed steep taxes and new restrictions on the American colonies. The Stamp Act of 1765 required colonists to attach expensive tax stamps to all newspapers and legal documents. The Quartering Act required the colonies to provide barracks and supplies to British troops. Worsening relations. In protest, many colonists decided to boycott or refuse to buy British goods. Organizations known as the Sons of Liberty were formed throughout the colonies in opposition to the Stamp Act. Stamp Act Congress. In October of 1765, 9 of the 13 colonies sent representatives to the Stamp Act Congress held in New York City. The representatives prepared a declaration against the new British actions, which was sent to King George III. This action marked the first time that a majority of the colonies joined together to oppose British rule. As a result, the British Parliament repealed or canceled the Stamp Act. The same day it repealed the Stamp Act, Parliament passed the Declaratory Act of 1766, which stated that Parliament had the right to tax and make decisions for the American colonies in all cases. Then, in 1767, Parliament passed a set of laws that came to be known as the Townshend Acts. One of the Townshend Acts legalized the use of writs of assistance to assist customs officers in arresting smugglers. The writs were general search warrants that enabled customs officers to enter any location to look for evidence of smuggling. Angered by these laws, colonists caused trouble for British officials. The worst incident of violence took place in Boston. On March 5, 1770, British soldiers fired into a crowd, killing 5. The shootings became known as the Boston Massacre. New taxes and a tea party. The colonists resented the new taxes. Because they had no representatives in Parliament, as people living in Great Britain did, the colonists believed that Parliament had no right to tax them. They summed up their feelings with the slogan, "No taxation without representation." In 1773, Parliament passed another measure. The Tea Act gave the British East India Company the right to ship tea to the colonies without paying most of the taxes usually placed on tea. This made the East India Company tea cheaper than any other tea in the colonies, giving the British company an advantage over colonial merchants. In December 1773, a group of angry colonists dressed as Native Americans dumped 342 chests of British tea into Boston Harbor. In reaction to this protest, known as the Boston Tea Party, Parliament passed the Coercive Acts, which Americans call the Intolerable Acts. These laws restricted the colonists' civil rights, including the right to trial by jury. Reading check, explaining, why were the colonists angry about the new taxes? Moving toward independence. Main idea. The colonists began to take steps toward independence from Great Britain. Civics and you. How might you protest a new community or school rule that you believed was unfair? Read to find out how Americans protested British measures. The colonial governments banded together to fight the intolerable acts. In September 1774, 12 of the colonies sent delegates or representatives to Philadelphia to discuss their concerns. These representatives, from every colony except Georgia, wanted to establish a political body to represent American interests and challenge or question British control. The First Continental Congress. The meeting in Philadelphia, known as the First Continental Congress, lasted 7 weeks. During that time, the delegates sent a document to King George III demanding that the rights of the colonists be restored or given back. They also made plans to extend the boycott of British goods. When the Congress ended, the delegates vowed to hold another meeting if their demands were not met by the following year. King George responded with force. In April 1775, two battles between British and colonial soldiers took place in Massachusetts, at Lexington and Concord. These became the first battles of the Revolutionary War. Until this time, most colonists still thought of themselves as loyal subjects of Great Britain. Now, with British soldiers shooting at Americans, many colonists began to question their attachment to Britain. More people began talking about independence or self-reliance and freedom from outside control. Years after the first battle, Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote this poem to immortalize the colonists who fought at Concord. By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmers stood, and fired the shot heard round the world. Ralph Waldo Emerson, The Concord Hymn. The Second Continental Congress. In May 1775, colonial leaders met at the Second Continental Congress in Philadelphia. Not every member of the Congress favored independence. Some believed the colonists could never win a war against Great Britain. Others were still loyal to their home country. The Congress spent many months debating the best course of action. Meanwhile, support for independence grew. In January of 1776, an American colonist named Thomas Paine inspired many other colonists by publishing a pamphlet titled Common Sense. In it, Paine called for complete independence from Britain. He argued that it was simply common sense to stop following the royal brute, King George III. Paine called the colonists' actions a struggle for freedom. By 1776, more than half of the delegates of the Second Continental Congress agreed with Paine that the colonies must break away from Britain. The Congress, acting now as a government for the colonies, appointed a committee to write a document that would officially announce the independence of the United States. Thomas Jefferson, a delegate from Virginia, did most of the work. His draft of the Declaration explained why the United States of America should be a free nation. Reading check, explaining, why did colonists gather at the Second Continental Congress? The Declaration of Independence. Main idea. The Declaration of Independence used traditional English political rights to call for independence for the colonies. Civics and you. Why do you think governments are formed? Read to find out how the writer of the Declaration of Independence addressed this question. The Declaration argued that the British government did not look after the interests of the colonists. The authors included a long list of abuses by King George III and called him a tyrant, unfit to be the ruler of a free people. However, the document was much more than a list of complaints. Democratic ideals. The second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence set forth the colonists' beliefs about the rights of individuals. It said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." The Declaration of Independence. The paragraph quoted from the Declaration went on to say, "To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government." The Declaration of Independence. In other words, the purpose of a government is to protect the rights of the people. Moreover, government is based on the consent or agreement of the people. It only has the powers that the governed give it. The people are also entitled to change a government if it disregards their rights or their combined wishes. These ideas were not new. Remember, as you read earlier, the ideas about democracy and freedom originated with the ancient Greeks. Jefferson was influenced by John Locke and other writers. As you learned earlier, Locke wrote that good government is based on a social contract between the people and the rulers. Locke also wrote that all people should equally enjoy the rights to life, liberty, and property. An uncertain future. The Second Continental Congress approved the Declaration of Independence with a few changes on July 4, 1776. The American colonies were now independent states, at least in theory. True freedom, though, would not come until the war ended and Great Britain officially recognized the United States as an independent nation. Reading check. Summarizing. According to the Declaration, what is the purpose of government? The Declaration of Independence. In Congress, July 4, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. Preamble. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Declaration of Natural Rights. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. List of grievances. Such has been the patient sufferances of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in a legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws of naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislature. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislature and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely parallel in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, We have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attention to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them to the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. Resolution of Independence by the United States. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from the allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. John Hancock, President from Massachusetts. Georgia, Butin Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, George Walton. North Carolina, William Hooper, Joseph Hughes, John Penn. South Carolina, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward, Jr., Thomas Lynch, Jr., Arthur Middleton. Maryland, Samuel Chase, William Paca, Thomas Stone, Charles Carroll of Carrollton. Virginia, George Wythe, Richard Henry Lee, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Harrison, Thomas Nelson, Jr., Francis Lightfoot Lee, Carter Braxton. Pennsylvania, Robert Morris, Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Franklin, John Morton, George Clymer, James Smith, George Taylor, James Wilson, George Ross. Delaware, Caesar Rodney, George Reed, Thomas McKean. New York, William Floyd, Philip Livingston, Francis Lewis, Lewis Morris. New Jersey, Richard Stockton, John Witherspoon, Francis Hopkinson, John Hart, Abraham Clark. New Hampshire, Josiah Bartlett, William Whipple, Matthew Thornton. Massachusetts, Samuel Adams, John Adams, Robert Treat Paine, Elbridge Gerry. Rhode Island, Stephen Hopkins, William Ellery. Connecticut, Samuel Huntingdon, William Williams, Oliver Wolcott, Roger Sherman.